Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Martin Freeman. My registration number is 19263. I would like to thank the court for permitting our case to go first today, to allow me to make a connection that I need to make. I wish to make three points only. I think the briefs very well speak for themselves. My three points are going to deal with the following three items: the mootness argument made by the appellee, some emphasis about the undisputed matters in this case, and the import of page 927 of the Bedore versus Johnson case decided by the Supreme Court this year. In this case, the jury was decided there was no negligence after the judge permitted them to consider that question, and in permitting them to consider it, it allowed them to consider the sudden emergency doctrine. The jury found there was no negligence and then answered the question, was the negligence, if any, of the defendant a cause of any of the injuries? And they answered that as they had to, no, because there was no negligence, which they had already found. Seven times in the brief by the appellee, they misrepresented that statement. Four times in pages 27, 11, and 15, they said that the jury found that the 2007 accident did not cause the injuries claimed by Mr. France. That's just not so. What the jury found was that there was no negligence on the part of Ms. Cohen that caused it. Three times they found that her conduct, negligent or otherwise, was not a cause of Ms. France's claim damages at pages 8, 15, and 16. That's just not so. They found only that her negligence, if any, was not the cause, not that other conduct was not the cause. So the causation, and then they argued that because the accident didn't cause damages, the whole issue of liability is moot. And that's just not so.
Why not?
Why not?
Why is it not moot?
It is not moot because they did not find that the accident didn't cause the injuries or that the conduct didn't cause the injuries. They found only that the negligence, if any, of Ms. Cohen didn't cause it. And having already decided that there was no negligence, they had to answer that second question, no. The second point I wish to make is, in a nutshell, that so much of this case is undisputed that the defense needed the emergency doctrine to overcome our motion for directed verdict and for new trial on the issue of damages. It is undisputed that there was no third party, known or unknown, at fault, no comparative fault on the part of my client, no weather issue of ice, snow, rain, sleet, fog, or anything. It was a sunny day, broad daylight. No defect in the roadway, no sudden movement of other vehicles, no obstructions in the roadway, no curves or hills on the roadway, straight, level roadway.
Mr. Freeman, let me ask you about that. You mentioned in your brief that Ms. Cohen testified that she had to slam on her brakes. Isn't that some evidence that there was possibly an emergency, or isn't that something that could have been interpreted that way by the jurors?
Well, she had to slam on her brakes because she couldn't stop in time when the cars in front of her stopped. Here's why that's not evidence. It's a statement of, it's a descriptor which is belied by the evidence. The evidence is that four cars in front of her, undisputed, was making a turn slowly. Three cars in front of her had to stop for that car to make a turn. The motorcycle, two vehicles in front of her had to stop and did. And the car in front of her, Mr. Franson, had to stop and did. There's undisputed evidence that there was no squealing, no skidding, no sliding. And even the defendant, Ms. Cohen, said she has no recollection of any skidding, sliding, or squealing at all. And she saw my client's brake lights come on a full 3 to 5 seconds before the impact in a car that wasn't skidding, so she said slammed on the brakes. Yes, she did, but that's belied by the evidence, and that's not evidence of a sudden emergency of the kind that would be allowed any more than a sudden emergency is caused by an icy patch. It was to be expected that vehicles traveling on roadways, sometimes in heavy traffic or because of turns in front of you, come to a stop.
Counsel, is it your position that any time you have a rear end collision and you have application of the presumption that the person doing the rear ending is negligent, that you cannot, or that that's incompatible with a sudden emergency instruction? Is that what you're arguing to this court?
No, not at all. if the car in front of him, if someone had run out in front of the car, Mr. Franzen's car, and he had screeched to a halt in a panic stop, for which there's no evidence here of that, because there's no sound or sight of a car screeching or sliding. There's only a car coming to a stop, which she characterized as slamming on the brakes. But she didn't hear any brakes. Nobody heard any brakes. So the sudden emergency doctrine could be caused by God forbid it should happen, a car driving on a highway with a rock coming off the mountain and hitting the car in front. Sudden emergencies can happen from outside forces. There were no outside forces causing a sudden emergency here. The only reason she couldn't stop like the three vehicles in front of her is because she was either going too closely or not paying attention. It doesn't matter. There's a presumption. Rebuttable, to be sure. There's a presumption of negligence that has to be rebutted by some evidence of something that allows the issue of negligence to go to the jury. So the judge committed two errors in not granting the directed verdict, and secondly, in giving the jury the negligence issue and giving the sudden emergency doctrine.
Wasn't the trial judge effectively just following the Young versus Clark case, and didn't that involve some similar facts in that, you know, the driver that hit the injured party could not see beyond that person in front of him, which is the situation here.
But there was
here.
Something in that case that happened in the nature of a sudden emergency. There wasn't that here. I think if the court, members of the panel, will ask themselves the question that if she did not characterize it as slamming on the brakes, with the undisputed evidence of sight and hearing from all the parties, including the defendant, that there was nothing sudden happening other than the fact that she slammed into the rear of my client, then if you would say that in the absence of her using the verb slam, that the facts of hearing and sight didn't show any emergency. There was no emergency.
But why isn't that a jury question, whether they believe her description of what happened more than they believe, you know, what people saw or heard? Or
it is up to the members of this court, as it was the trial judge and where he was erroneous, to decide whether her recollection is going to be given effect for what she saw and heard or what she characterized at trial. What she saw was a car in front of her, not sliding or skidding, but coming to a stop with its brake lights on when she says she was going 15 to 20 miles an hour for 3 to 5 seconds, 1001, 1002, 1003, you know, the old counting game, for 3 to 5 seconds before the impact. Now, if there had been any of that, or if the brake lights never came on until the last half a second, perhaps it would be appropriate to overcome the presumption of negligence. But that didn't happen here. The only thing that happened here was the lady got on the stand and used the verb slamming on the brakes in her testimony. There's no evidence that the brakes were locked or skidding. There were no skid marks from any of these other cars at the scene. There was no screeching sound, not only from my client who didn't hear it, but she doesn't recall hearing any of that either. So what we have was, and that brings me to the third point, at page 927 of Bedour versus Johnson, the Supreme Court said that Johnson's pre-accident conduct, Johnson was the defendant, that Johnson's pre-accident conduct may have caused or contributed to the emergency situation, may have, demonstrates that the trial court should not have instructed the jury on sudden emergency principles. The trial court abused its discretion. Let me read that again. That Johnson's pre-accident conduct may have caused or contributed to the emergency situation demonstrates that the trial court should not have instructed the jury on sudden emergency principles. And in the same page, Supreme Court said, the jury could have believed that Johnson, the defendant, was driving negligently before he contacted the icy patch, in our case, before Franzen's brake lights came on, yet find that the icy patch formation itself, in that case, the slowing traffic formation, was a sudden emergency, the existence of which he did not cause. As such, the jury may have concluded that Johnson was not chargeable with negligence due to the sudden emergency instruction. In our case, you have exactly the same thing. You have somebody who, as the court said, the jury could have believed that Ms. Cohen was negligent, but because of the sudden emergency doctrine, decided that she wasn't chargeable with negligence. So I understand your questions, and I welcome them, and it's very important to understand that if you scour this record, the only thing you will find is the use of her verb, slam on the brakes. That what she saw and what she heard and what Mr. Franson saw and heard don't have that. They have traffic stopping in front of somebody for a turning vehicle, several vehicles up. And what she did after she saw his brake lights come on of braking and trying to turn doesn't have anything to do with the case. That was after there was too little and too late to stop. So what we have here is not only that the instruction shouldn't have been given, my client under Colorado law was entitled to a presumption of negligence, which unless rebutted becomes a conclusive presumption. The only rebuttal was the use of that verb alongside her own testimony of what she saw and heard, which wasn't a slamming on the brakes.
Mr. Freeman, why wouldn't it be relevant that Ms. Cohen tried to swerve to the left after the accident? Doesn't that suggest that she was doing that because there was an emergency? Not necessarily. I'm not saying that there was, but isn't that something that the jury could properly have considered?
Judge Dahlman, make the distinction between what she did reasonably after it was too late because of an emergency with a small e and what the sudden emergency doctrine applies to. This emergency doesn't apply if it could have, not must have, if it could have been caused by her own conduct. That's the lessons of Bedore versus Johnson. The court said that the pre-accident conduct, following too closely, for example, or not paying attention, whatever it was, may have caused or contributed to the occurrence, and the jury could have believed that she was negligent in that, but felt that she wasn't chargeable with that because of the sudden emergency instruction. Make the distinction between an emergency that's not under the scope of the sudden emergency doctrine because it's caused or could have been caused by the defendant. And that is what happened here. That's why we have the presumption of negligence. So the court should have granted our directed verdict. It should not, having erred in not doing so, it should not have given the emergency instruction. Giving it was error, and then it should have granted a new trial on the issue of damages. Now, the mootness argument I've covered, be clear. I do not stand here and assert that on remand, a jury may not consider what portion of my client's injuries resulted from that accident. It may, but it should not be permitted to consider either the question of negligence, that should be over, or even if it were to consider it, certainly should not be given the emergency instruction. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Jesse Brandt on behalf of defendant appellee Shannon Cohen. Mr. Franson's complaints in this appeal essentially arise from the fact that the trial court allowed the trier of fact to do exactly what they were supposed to do here, which was to listen to disputed evidence, judge the credibility of the witnesses, and reach a determination based on the evidence it heard. I want to first address an issue brought up on behalf of Mr. Franson, which was that the only evidence of a sudden emergency was Ms. Cohen's testimony that she slammed on her brakes. That is incomplete at best. She testified that the stop was abrupt. Mr. Franson himself testified that the chain of stoppage with the vehicles in front of him was a result of another vehicle straddling two lanes of traffic, causing the vehicles in front of him to stop, causing him to stop, and ultimately Ms. Cohen stopped and attempted to avoid the accident, did not. There was other evidence presented of non-negligence on the part of Ms. Cohen. There was no evidence, for example, that she wasn't failing to keep a proper lookout. There was no evidence that she was speeding. There was no evidence that she did
not. Mr. Brad, let me stop you right there. Aren't you troubled at all by the fact that she testified that she saw the brake lights come on for 3 to 5 seconds, and she's going, what, 15, 20 miles an hour? Isn't that adequate time for her to have come to a stop?
Well, Your Honor, she testified that she immediately placed her foot on the brake as of when she became aware that the brake lights were on. Whether or not that was adequate time to avoid the accident, I think, is a question for the jury. And the jury here found that her actions were not a cause.
But isn't it a question for the judge to exercise his discretion on allowing the sudden emergency instruction? Faced with the testimony of that much time to observe the stop the brake lights in the car ahead, isn't that a question for the trial court to determine, and whether and then decide whether or not to give the sudden emergency instruction?
Well, I agree that that is evidence that the trial court may properly consider. However, it also has to take that into context of all of the other competent evidence that was introduced at trial. And ultimately, as to the propriety of that instruction giving, it's, as mentioned in the brief, I won't belabor this point, but it's kind of a twofold inquiry. One is whether the instruction that was given states the law at the time. It did. And then two, the trial court has some discretion to apply the, assuming the instruction restrains the law, to give the instruction based on the competent evidence. And there was competent evidence of a sudden emergency here. The use of the phrase sudden emergency, I think, kind of overstates the circumstances under which that instruction is warranted. It's a sudden or unexpected circumstance, not of Ms. Cohen's making. And that threshold is satisfied here. She testified that it was an abrupt stop, ultimately caused by the vehicle in front straddling the two lanes of traffic, and that was not of her own making.
But isn't that the sudden emergency defense or instruction or doctrine? Isn't it basically just an application of a reasonable person standard? And by giving a separate instruction above and beyond defining reasonable person standard, isn't the trial court effectively elevating that circumstance above other evidence? And why should the trial court do that?
Well, and that's ultimately, it sounds like, or is the rationale, or at least part of the rationale that the Supreme Court cited in abolishing the sudden emergency doctrine going forward. I think if you go back to Young versus Clark, which was the law at the time the instruction was given, the authorities cited in that opinion, merely explain that that's a sort of a factor to consider when determining whether the defendant was acting reasonably. It's an explanatory, it's an additional instruction, I guess, to explain what circumstances you may take into account when determining whether a defendant was acting reasonably.
Are you going to address the mootness issue?
Yes. On behalf of Ms. Cohen, I disagree with that characterization of how Mr. Franson construed the jury's instruction or the jury's findings there. If you go to page 986 of the record, and this gives the issue a little more context. The court actually referred in response to a question from the jury, and the record does not indicate what the question was, but it's clear that it was a reference to the verdict form. Page 986, line 121, the court directs the jury back to the Carey instruction and says, quote, if you find that plaintiff Graham Francis did not have injuries, comma, damages, or losses, or if you find that defendant was not negligent, or that no negligent of the defendant was a cause of the plaintiff's claimed injuries, damages, or losses, then your jury leader shall complete only special verdict form A and all jurors will sign it. That's ultimately what they did. I don't think it's appropriate at the appellate level here to try to divine the juror's intent on that form. There was ample evidence presented at trial that would cause the jury to question causation of the injuries that Mr. Franson attributed to the 2007 accident. He was involved in a 2006 accident. He had, pardon me, he had treatment that or was treating for the 2006 accident as of the time of the 2007 accident. And the other thing I think that was appropriate, or another reason not to disturb the jury's verdict here in this case, was that there was ample reason to question the credibility of the account given by Mr. Franson as to the nature of his injuries and that he attributed to the 2007 accident.
Mr. Brandt, what is your response to Mr. Freeman's contention that because the jury found that there was no negligence, it necessarily was required to conclude that there was no causation?
I don't read the instruction that way. It allows for a jury to answer yes or no, finding negligence or not, and ultimately the important part of that question that's asked in that verdict form is whether the conduct was the cause of the injuries attributed to the accident.
But if the jury found, as it did, that there was no negligence, then under what circumstances would it have found that there was causation or needed to have considered whether there was causation?
Well, there could be circumstances where a jury could find that a defendant was negligent, but does not find that the negligence was the cause of the injuries.
Right, but here we have a situation where the jury found that there was no negligence. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
So at that point, why would the jurors even have to answer the question about causation?
Well, I don't know, but they did, and they ultimately answered that in the negative. I think the question allows for the possibility of negligence or no negligence. It says the negligence, if any, of the defendant, do you find that was a cause of the injuries? And so I think that's an alternative basis for this verdict to stand. And ultimately, kind of as I mentioned earlier in the initial portion of my argument, is set aside the issues of presumption just for a minute here. Ultimately, the risk of non-persuasion lies with the plaintiff. He has both the burden of proving that Ms. Cohen was negligent here or acted outside of the standard of care that we would expect from a reasonable driver in the same or similar circumstances, and two, also has the burden of proving that any negligence was the cause of the injuries. And that's his burden throughout.
Counsel, so if we were to find that it was improper to give the instruction, what would be the appropriate remedy? Would it be, as your opponent suggests, entry of verdict on liability against the defendant, or would it be a new trial? What would be the proper remand instruction?
Well, I think the appropriate, if the court, and let me restate that to make sure I understand your question correctly. If the court finds that the sudden emergency instruction should not have been given, is that the premise?
That's the premise.
Okay.
What do we do with then after that?
Well, I go back to the mootness, I guess, as Mr. Franson characterized it, the mootness issue, is ultimately we A, have a finding of no negligence, and B, have a finding of no causation. And even if the court finds that the jury was improperly instructed on the sudden emergency doctrine, you still have the finding of no causation. And so I think the verdict still stands. So those are elements that Mr. Franson had the burden to prove. and had the opportunity to prove, and ultimately the finder of fact found that he did not.
I'm not clear on your answer to Judge Fox's question. If we were to say that the court abused its discretion in giving the sudden emergency instruction, what then? Maybe you've already answered it and I didn't follow.
Well, I
just state it again.
I may not have answered it clearly, Your Honor. If the judge found that the if the court finds that the judge abused its discretion in giving the sudden emergency instruction, there still is an alternative basis for that verdict to stand, which is the jury's findings that Ms. Cohen's conduct, which is ultimately what we're talking about here when the phrase negligence is used in that instruction, was not the cause of Mr. Franson, rather's injuries. And so there's an alternative basis to allow the verdict to stand, essentially a harmless error standard.
Thank you.
And I guess there's no need, assuming the court has no further questions, I will sit down, I guess, with just this brief comment as to the applicability of Bedore. In that case, the Supreme Court specifically stated that the sudden emergency doctrine was abolished going forward. Also, in the context of, maybe this won't be so brief, but also in the context of Bedore, in discussing whether that instruction was appropriately given in the first place, that case arose from an icy driving conditions, and the Supreme Court went back to its opinion in Kendrick, which essentially said that icy driving conditions are something that a reasonable driver would anticipate. So I think the factual premise of the finding in Bedore that the sudden emergency doctrine did not apply is much different than the case we have here.
So if icy conditions are something a reasonable driver should anticipate, why shouldn't a reasonable driver anticipate that there might be stoppage in front of the person right in front of him?
Well, the general, and I won't be able to provide you a case site, but I will tell you that as a matter of law, drivers are entitled to assume that other drivers on the road will observe the rules of the road. What we have here is testimony from Mr. Franson himself that you had the driver in the initial chain straddling two lanes of traffic and not honoring his or her traffic lanes. I think the test, if I recall correctly, in both Bedore and Kendrick, which also was an icy driving condition, is there was evidence that both of the defendants in those actions were aware of the road conditions at the time they entered the roadway. So thank you.
Counsel, you have about a minute if you wish to use it. You don't have to.
It's very brief. But here's what you do if you decide that the emergency doctrine, in our view, here's what you do. You remand it, and then, in your opinion, you have to decide on remand if the emergency doctrine is inappropriate, was the presumption of negligence overcome? If in your judgment it was not overcome, then it's remanded to determine what injuries he had from this accident and how much would be awarded for that. If you judge that on remand, because the emergency doctrine shouldn't have been given, that there was some evidence that she overcame the presumption, then you remand for a new trial on the liability end as well without the emergency instruction. We think the former applies. And in response to that same question, counsel said under the, she has a right to rely on the rules of the road of the driver in front of her. That's not an issue here, because Mr. Franson obeyed the rules of the road. There's no claim of comparative fault, and there's no claim of a third party fault. 6 seconds to spare. Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Thank you both for your fine argument.